This is Donald Brass Stacks. Just before we went to the news and the other information there, the Starcom Network News and the regional roundup, we had a gentleman on the line who says that he is an ex-convict, and he was talking about the need to address a limit, a 7-year limit, on people who want to get their criminal records expunged. But I asked him to stay on so that we could talk a little bit about life as an ex-con in Barbados. And you suggested to me, sir, that you have been out of jail now for 10 to 15 years?
14 years now.
14 years. Yeah. I'm trying to link up here with somebody else. Let me see if I have them. A second person who is interested in this topic. Are you there, sir?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm here, David.
Okay, so we have them both on the line. share with me how challenging it has been for you in these 14 years. You've had a job all 14 of these years?
No, when the first 2 years out of jail, I didn't get nothing to do. I was like actually on a block, sitting down, had nothing to do, no help on the one. And like, I just get tired of sitting on a block. And actually, a youngster about 17 years old introduced me to this company of hiring people. And I went to the company because I was a tradesman by profession. So I went to this company and I worked at this company for a while, producing work for this company. And the people at this company, because you know me, I got that working spirit. So I producing work for these people, and at a fast pace, and they're treating me unkindly. So I leave the company after 5 years or so. So then after that, now I was just like batting about, ends the work here, ends the work there. So I try everything in my power not to get in nothing with the system again and get involved in, you know, falling on a crime, nothing like that. I fight real hard. Trust me, I take a lot from people. I walk away from a lot within these 14 years I was out here. Because I just determined not to go back to jail. But the system is not helping people like us. We go to the system turning us wrong all the time. So I know some people will laugh back in now and say, well, the system ain't doing anything for me, but I could best go do crime. And some of them actually going to do that when they come out of jail after 7 years, and you hear your conviction can get expunged. People can get frustrated and they might laugh back into this crime again.
How else is this system turning you around?
I mean, like, when you go forget the conviction case.
Apart from this issue of the expunging of the record.
Okay, as far as, like, getting, like, assistance for certain things you ask for, you know?
Like what?
Like, so if you ask for tools or anything like that, for, like, do your work personally, like, whackers, anything to walk around, do your work. I don't know, for that, for survival's sake, you're getting turned around, you're getting all about a talk, and telling you, promising you this, and promising you go back, you're hearing a different story, and, you know? So, basically, you go, we keep fighting all the time, because if you don't fight on your own to find some by the means of survival, then you're going to lapse back into this crime thing.
Okay.
And eventually, you don't want to go back into that life again.
Well, to the person who is the second caller on this issue, would you care to say who you are? Are you interested in doing that? Because I understand that you are also an author.
Yes, David. I'm author W. Sincere, I think.
Okay. How many books have you written so far?
Okay. I wrote 3 books while incarcerated. So.
How many years you spent in jail?
I spent 10 years, a 10-year sentence.
Okay. And your 3 books are on what types of themes?
Okay, well, one has been published so far. The second is about to be released. But the first one to be published is the well-known King Seymour's novel, Seas of Death, that I've written in 2010. And since my release, the book has, after being launched in 2015, and 16, then I was invited to Toronto to participate in the Toronto Urban Book Expo in Canada. And on the time of my flight after being sponsored by the DIDC, who was assisting cultural artists. And I was granted the opportunity to fly to Toronto to attend the expo. I was barred from entering into Canada. And that was one of the main and major disappointments that I had since coming home from prison. So I continued after those, despite that disappointment. And then it was awarded in the National Independence Festival of Creative Arts in 2016. And I keep on working from there. But there was one point which I tried to get the opportunity to have my record expunged. And after hearing the caller earlier and hearing what the actual clause that he himself has been obstructed by, which in the law it states that if you have been incarcerated for more than 3 years, I hear he's saying 7, but I think it's 3 years. So if any person is being incarcerated for more than 3 years, according to the gentleman, your life is over. Don't care what you do, don't care if you're an artisan, don't care if you're a cultural artist, don't care what you are. And that has hindered me so far from having my record expunged. And the novel is doing rather well. I'm a cultural entrepreneur, and I made that my work. And it's becoming very popular now, even in Toronto, and it was recently featured on one in Barbados and honored in Canada, listed among 50 writers in Toronto, and they were from Toronto, USA, and Africa. So I've seen, opportunities, just great opportunities, not only for myself, but for the country itself and so on, and the cultural art. But I've met this wall of what we would call jurisprudence, that there's no way that I can continue to contribute to society in any way, or will be forgiven maybe for my past.
Therefore, what are you calling for?
Well, I'm calling for, because I don't want to be political in any way, but I'm calling for the laws of the land to recognize that that the crime and violence that we are experiencing now is persons that have been incarcerated themselves that are actually looking for a chance. And if we don't get that, then it is a possibility those without a sound mind may find themselves again in clutches of the law.
So you are essentially saying to us that some of what is called recidivism, that's the term mm-hmm. they use,
yes.
is linked to a structure in this society that disadvantages people who have been incarcerated, and it disadvantages them because the time limit is wrong.
Yes, because what I'm saying on the point that I brought to someone, actually, the stature, is that I myself had an experience in incarceration. We would see in prison that you would have fellows that were what you would call recidivists. Yes, that would return to prison. And most of them you would see that is regular recidivists, people that possibly did 2 years, 1 year, 3 years, or whatever. And, there's no disrespect to them whatsoever. But a lot of these persons sometimes on drug abuse and all these kind of things like that. And I told the person, okay, let's compare them then to a person that did a long time in prison, where in which is the opportunity that you may have having a long sentence, whether it's 5 years or whatever, you come up, you work in the carpenter shop, you work with the electricians or maintenance or whatever. Then there's another section, like me, maybe you live in security or something, and maybe something happens to pop up. So what really happened for me in security is that I did a course called the reintegration course that was brought here by a company called the Tea Tree Associates, and was brought into the prisons at the time. And some of the guys got the opportunity in security to do it, and I did it. And I did that reintegration course, and it did help me. So what I'm saying is that if prison or incarceration is supposed to be a part of penal reform, and a person spends a long time within, I think that he should be reformed in some way. rather than a person that just really visits prison or breaking injury or something like that, and then, you know, he gives a little time, and then, you know, he gets the opportunity to get his conviction cleared, and you know, and then, you know, maybe become a recidivist again. But I'm saying that a person that has done a major amount of time, the other gentleman on the phone who have been incarcerated like me, they come to realization. There's a lot of people that come to realization after doing long sentences in time. And then opportunity should be there for them, because they've already and totally paid their price.
That's the second caller, the first caller?
Yeah. Okay. What he's saying is so true. I mean, the ones that got a weaker mind can find themselves lots of back into the system. But this thing, with this amount of time you're spending, that's irrelevant to how much time you do here now. You know what I'm saying? You're behaving yourself 14, 15 years, and the system's still treating you like a outcast and giving you a chance to put yourself back into society. You know, so it's only the fittest or the strongest of the minds that can get through this.
How much of this is linked to what we are seeing as an upsurge in things like gun crimes and stuff? I mean, because you all have spent so long in jail, you've seen a lot, and you can give us an insight into how you believe the society has changed. What is driving all of this, in your judgment, based upon what you've seen?
In this society, right, people got this thing like,
okay,
if you are educated.
For me, David?
Yeah. The other guy is saying that there's some discrimination against people on the basis of education. Expand on that. Let me hear.
No.
Mr. Sincere, just hold on. Let him okay. Come in. I'll come
because
to you.
Went to UE and do certain things. They use education to the advantage to feel more important than you are down there in the lower stage of the society to look down upon you. It's still lifting you up, because that's the purpose of education, to lift up others. But people say to feel important and look over others and keep stepping upon them. And we got enough of them in the system, because sometimes you go to certain government places to do business through the fact of how you look and how you put off yourself according to your education level. No, they treat you like a outcast. And a lot of the things that people are frustrated, they tell themselves, well, I use my body in this society because of how they treated me. Well, anger come in there next minute to find yourself in crime. Some of them is people that I had said it before that came home and went through the same, let down by the system, and you get frustrated and repeat. You know, it's a cycle. It's all about the system. The system is who will hold a court and how they treat you when you exit jail, according to you willing to do with yourself when you get over here. And I'll treat you according.
Let me get the view of Mr. Sincere.
Yeah.
And you can speak up a bit, Mr. Sincere, because your line is not the best.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, repeat the question then.
Yeah, I wanted to get your interpretation of what is causing some of this crime that we are seeing out here. As you know, there's a lot of concern right now about murders and gun violence in particular. And based upon the time that you have spent in jail, the things that you have seen there, what is your assessment of factors that may be responsible for that?
Well, as I said when I spoke on many different occasions, whether even within schools and so on, and I've been saying it for a long time that the marginalization of the society is something that we really have to look at, and we're asking several leaders to do it. I was saying it since the previous conversation that the marginalization of society, as the gentleman was trying to say, persons that are, or let's say they're educated and thing, and I'm quite proud of that. I think a lot of people are proud of that as well. If you hear sometimes in prison how guys celebrate some of the victories of what is called the educated people in the country. But then to come home feeling that you're not accepted or you're an outcast is a different story. Because here I am, a writer now, with a book recognized in North America and even in England, and you just see many reviews on Amazon. And yet, I have a feeling in my country that I'm not accepted. I mean, I can't get my book in pages like other writers. And, you know, there's a lot of different things that, you know, different difficulties that you encounter.
You can't get your book in local bookstores?
Well, I find difficulty even in getting that done because there's no backing, there's no support, there's no, you know. And according to the gentleman, he was lucky when he came home and having to work in several places at times. But when he came home, you know, I could hardly get employment, and I went to several places. And that is what made me then even consider my, you know, something. I think there was always the old saying, if God gives you a gift, you use it. And I did that. You know, I mean, I became a cultural entrepreneur. So, but so you know, you meet a lot of increments, a lot of difficulties that people believe, man. They say, man, he's all convict or whatever. He ain't think he shouldn't be here or whatever. And then, you know, it's difficult to get simple things done unless you can have possibly a secretary or somebody to go forward. You know, on the basis of saying, well, okay, we're here as a publicist or here to represent serious work or whatever. So you see, and the society is structured that way. And even unconsciously or subconsciously, a person may be showing you some form of risk, of discrimination. So it's not about race or anything like that. You know, you'll find your own black doing these things to you.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you both for sharing the experience with us and actually enlightening some of us as to what you see as some of the factors that are driving people back to prison through the gateway of crime. Thanks a million. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, welcome to the program.
Well, I want to talk about two things. I want to talk about Rose, and then I want to end up by talking about Mr. Jesus. When you get to bus around the boat, the second turn would be a road called Cutting Road. At the junction of that road is a huge hole. And it always causes problems because people coming on to Map Hill, whether turning left or right, have to spawn that hole. And if you can turn to left, you can't turn. You have to go up and go through, past the road. I usually go through the road. I usually use alternative road because I know it's problems. Now, I want to talk about Plumtree Road and Saltish Dentistry Road. In 2018, the first Monday in May of 2018, a contractor came into that area, start work in Plumtree Road. The work was halted, and then they complete that Plumtree Road after the election. Then they went on to Saltish Dentistry Road and did a part of Saltish Dentistry Road, that part which housed a number of business houses. And the residents who were there before the business houses in Saltish Dentistry Road cannot have their road fixed. Mr. Ellis, I would like to invite you to come into Saltish Dentistry Road. And when you're coming, you're going to wear a pair of boots. And I'm not exaggerating. It is worse than a cat road. So I want you to find out from Mr. Tudor if he's still responsible for giving up work in MTW. If the contract was only fixed that part of the road that houses the business houses, and then you go on to pass the road, which is also ridiculous. A lot of gaps and gullies in that road. Somebody need to pay attention to that area. It's time that those people, that a lot of senior citizens live in that area, and they have to put up one. The only time she went to church for a long time, because when it rained, there's a well that no longer worked because it stopped up. The mouth of the well is stopped up, and it needs to be cleared so it could pull off the water and much you walk up a lot because there's so many holes, huge holes, that the water settled there. So I will invite you not to take my words for it, but to come into Saltish Dentistry Road. If you want some directions, right, come up past the roundabout there, so Normanez roundabout, you will swing the left turn, you'll take care back to St. George, you'll make the first right turn. And at the corner, which was paved, the first time I'm seeing that a slip of curb is built, which is supposed to drain off or the water, and water is still there in the area, and you have a slip of curb, and the water is not running off. Now, I want to get to Mr. Pisa. I understand she. I hear that she's a lawyer. That's true.
As far as I know, yes. That has never been refuted by anybody.
Right. So that means she's an intelligent person, right?
Not necessarily. The two of those.
That means she's a woman. That means she can make her own mind, right?
Yes.
Right.
Let us assume that anybody who gets a law degree is intelligent. Okay, let's go. But you know, there are always exceptions to rules. I'm going to accept the general principle,
all right? Let us say that she read law, right? So yes. I think she's an intelligent person.
Yes.
Right? So don't try to I could get out of anything that you try to put me in. Now, I believe, and you can set me right because I don't know, that to be a candidate for a party, you have certain steps to go through, I believe. Would that be so for any of the two parties, or you could just make a morning and say, I want to be candidate?
Let me tell you, over the years, that whole issue of the selection of candidates for the parties has from time to time generated a lot of controversy at various points. And there seem to be, at points it is alleged that there are different strokes for different folks.
All right. Even if that's what you want, you mean for both parties or only for the Democrat Labor Party?
I've heard complaints from time to time. I've heard it in both parties, yes. It's been contentious at points in both.
So my point is that it appears to me that the members of the Barbados their parties is not satisfied with their candidate and they prefer Miss DePisa as an alternative because they're calling for her.
Oh, you mean like one of the early callers?
St. George North, they're not satisfied with their candidates, so they're calling for Mr. DePisa as an alternative.
So where are they making this call?
On the radio, on the calling program. Yesterday and today and things. So that means that they're not satisfied with their candidate. That's the point I want to make.
That the Dems aren't...
not the Barbados. Their party supporters are not satisfied with their candidate. So they want Mr. DePisa as an alternative.
But they want Mr. DePisa to run for the Dems.
They don't want
Miss DePisa to run in place of Miss Moore.
No. But they want her as an alternative.
But this is politics. You know how it is.
No, I know how it is. They're not satisfied with their candidate, so they're looking out. They want Miss DePisa.
All right. But let me put it to you this way. I've been watching this thing for so long that I know that you may be equally as political as they are in putting the case that you are now putting. Because they're just trying to be mischievous, and you are equally politically mischievous. So let us accept that this is politics. This is the way it works. Good afternoon, down to brass tacks. It's now 12:45. Welcome
good
to
afternoon,
the program.
Good afternoon, David.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi, it's Tessa.
Yeah, so you want to identify yourself, Tessa?
Yeah, Tessa Chatterton, sure.
Yeah.
I was in a medical facility and just had to leap outside. I just want to say how important it was for you to give voice to those two gentlemen, to have them articulate their needs and their concerns that are very pressing. I got to know Mr. Sincere early 2018 while working at the CARICOM Secretariat in Guyana. And he seated at the head table with the CARICOM Secretary General, the EU head of delegation. And here was a man who has produced a book, Fields of Death, and who has done amazing work. Yet, he has very basic needs that cannot be met. I have become his advocate. And this is not about me. I helped him complete his application, which was a very detailed application form to the Expungement Board, which falls under the Office of the Attorney General. I mean, one can understand why they want to be absolutely satisfied that the individual has paid their price and is now willing and able to move on with their life. But
so what would you recommend?
It's so protracted.
What would you recommend?
Honestly, the expungement board needs to meet. It needs to review the applications that are on its desk. You know, I don't wish to be political here, but the expungement board needs to do its work and help people to move on with their lives and so on.
Does it understand the extent to which these people's lives are being held up? Or, you know, sometimes they can have an underlying belief that people who've been to jail need to be punished for the rest of their life.
To hear that
the board does not meet regularly, and this is not the only one, there are other things in the country, other boards and bodies that go through that experience, but this one is particularly relevant given all the concerns that are being raised about what is happening in the country. You see, what is exposed here today is that this is not, the solution to Barbados' problem is not just locking up people. It's after people, after they've been locked up and they come back into society, and especially those who have been there long enough to have had a change of heart and want to actually reintegrate into society. There's a necessity to make sure that you facilitate them as much as possible so that
you
can make decent citizens of them.
David, I submitted the application on his behalf. I went to his MP. I did a number of steps to make sure that all the I's were dotted and the T's were crossed. I was in Guyana at the time. I followed it up as I, you know, on my return. It's now October 2020. We're no way further. I do not, you know, I do not know what is going on at the level of the board. I just know that people need help. They need to move on with their lives. And certainly Mr. Sincere and the other gentlemen have the capacity to do so. And we just need to give them the opportunity.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
And adding some weight to this issue. Down to brass tacks. Hello? You see, what's important about this is that on many occasions we sit down here and worry about what is happening with crime. And we are very kind of one-dimensional in how we see the problem, but we don't look at all of these other cogs in the wheel. And we come from a society that kind of looks down on the person. Once a convict, always a convict. So you don't have a voice, nobody listens to you. And you could be out there talking from now until the cows come home about what is wrong with the system. But only the experts, as long as you got a law degree or you're a specialist in the area of criminal behavior or psychology or sociology, you're listened to. But you know, often the same sociologists and specialists, you know, they go straight back to those people to do all the research and ask their opinion and then put it in a book or use it as the basis for their lectures and that sort of thing. That's what happens. But I hope somebody's listening, because I really didn't realize that this... I heard all of the song and dance about expunging these records. And I said, well, it's a good thing. But I didn't realize that people were still being hurt so much by it. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Yes. Hello. How are you doing?
Well, and you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Tessa, I am single. I know you're a little bit older, but I hear.
Are you single?
I'm single, man. And I can speak like a Jamaican, too.
What kind of program you think this is?
That's the nicest voice in the history of Barbados to me. I feel that girl, she's so good.
Behave yourself, man. And stop trying to get involved in trapping people on the radio.
Why you don't make Tessa? Why you don't make her a host?
You remind me of the fellow who used to call and say he was a white man. When I check, he was a black man.
Yeah?
You remind me of him. You single. Chances are, when I check on you,
you could determine the sexuality or race or
don't worry, I found out though.
From a radio.
I found out.
How you manage to find out that then?
You don't worry.
Got pure voices. That's I single. I like that. She, her voice is the best. I swear to you. And I can sound like a Jamaican too, you know. I can try my best. Anyhow, that aside, maybe one day she'll be.
I don't know what kind of nastiness you're coming there, dropping nasty remarks. Let me move on, man.
All right, here's the thing. Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, this COVID thing, man, is so. I don't know. Truth be told, I've been questioning it from day one, and I have had no reason to change my mind over time. I know we had a problem in 2001 where we had those buildings exploding, and there's always been, like, these guys overseas are trying to shut small economies down and make them more dependent, you know, and all this international war and terror, whatever it takes to scare people into falling in line.
Man,
we have had so many opportunities to get our cards, you know, in the right position, you know, to play this thing right. You know, things like self-reliance and export-oriented development and stuff, capital formation and that kind of thing. We had 2008 was predictable. If the international rating agencies had done their jobs, the same one that rated Barbados in 2010, 11, 12, 13, and 14, if they had done their jobs before 2008 stock market crash would not have happened. But it did. And all of a sudden, we're being challenged again. Oh, Lord, we've got to find ways to get tourists to combat the Barbados international business going through the... Oh, we are in trouble. Rather than change the way we do business, or the way we try to make foreign exchange, we continue and hope things will come, you know, things will happen again for us. You know, oil prices crashed down to the basic, and now all prices, by the way, didn't fall in pursuit of that. They didn't chase that fall. We're still paying exceptionally high prices at the pump. But the oil prices messed up a whole few economies that depend, including trade, that are depending on oil. And they didn't change anything. It seems as if it doesn't matter if you change governments. They never seem to do things right. Make no mistake, this COVID-19 is part of that same process. I cannot understand for the life of me, why it is that 100 people die in Jamaica. 100. 102. Jamaica has a population of 2.6. Jamaica got more people in it than all of the rest of the English-speaking Caribbean combined.
So you don't understand why they're so concerned about it?
100 people dead, and so, you got a quote from COVID. You got a quote 100. Well, you don't quote the 100 as a...
No. Come on. Let's put it in perspective. It is not only about
this is exactly what I'm doing.
Oh, please. It is not only about the deaths. It is also about the number of cases and the extent to which those cases are putting pressure on the health services.
Okay,
there's a ripple effect also on... Once that is happening, there are people who got chronic ailments, who want heart surgeries and stuff like that. Those people are being pushed further and further back because of the extent to which the health services are responding to the COVID crisis. It's not as simple as the deaths.
How do you know this?
Because this is what is being reported in Jamaica.
But maybe this is what...
And has been reported to be... Even though we didn't have as big a problem here... You may recall that the hospital indicated that we had a situation where cases were being put back. In recent weeks, we have had people complain that they have had to, when they've gone to the hospital, they have had challenges trying to get public care as a consequence of it. So don't look at this only in the context of how many people die.
Okay, well let's follow your line of argument. Those people that have died in any event didn't die of no COVID.
Well,
they would have been dying anyway, and the COVID only helped them a little bit.
All right,
way.
Then. All
so
right.
Here we go. So here we go.
Okay,
here we go.
Then.
So you have so
All
many
right.
other conditions. There are so many other conditions out there.
According to a friend of mine, God just spoke.
There are so many conditions out there that would also put a little bit of weight on the existing health so facilities, okay. Like the flu, like the common cold, like...
You're going overboard with this thing, man.
No, it's not overboard.
You are going overboard.
There's something more certainly wrong. Because if you can quote a death in terms of numbers, why not come and say how many people died of cancer? More people died of cancer in Barbados in the past 7 months than Jamaica of COVID. More people. But you want to quote numbers in that regard. A man's on TV every week saying 1 in 5 people have type 2 diabetes, which can send you along.
Man, look, seriously,
my friend,
let's move.
Let's
move on, because I've sat here on two previous occasions, and you have said exactly the same thing. I mean, why am I going to have to deal with this yet again? I mean, and I'm sure I'm not the only person that you spoke to on it. I mean, you're just repeating this particular thing ad nauseum. Let's move on. Down to brass tacks. And not that I disagree with you. You're entitled to an opinion or anything, but if this thing is coming back at us all the time. The same story, same style. Down to brass tacks.
Good day.
Hi.
Yes. I want to talk about the expungement law.
Yes.
I want to say that before 1997, it was very hard for anybody who had committed any crime at all to have it expunged from their record. I remember a friend of mine who was recommended to be a justice of peace, and he couldn't be accepted because many years ago, when he was just a youngster, he got into a little tete-a-tete. I think he cursed a policeman from the same area, but it was a crime, and he could not get to be a justice of peace because he had that on his record. And there are a lot of minor cases like that, but I remember David Simmons bringing the recommendation to Parliament in 1997, and it spoke to a person having a non-custodial sentence. He said they would have had their record expunged after 5 years. So even then, it wasn't that easy. If you had a non-custodial sentence, you had to apply to get the record expunged. It would be done not immediately, but after 5 years. If you were sentenced to 1 year in jail or less, you could have your record erased, but it took 7 years. So I'm saying that, and then for those between 1 year and 3 years, it took 10 years to have it expunged.
So you said that to say what? That we've come a long way?
I'm saying, you like to jump me, you know, David.
Yeah.
Let me make my point. I don't just make points because I want to make a point. I made it based on facts. I'm making the point.
You know, I began the program by saying, I don't know who's going to get under my skin and under whose skin I will
David,
get.
I'm not getting under your skin. You're not getting under my skin.
So let me make sure that neither one of us runs into that position today. You were saying.
When I'm making a point, let me talk.
You were saying.
I'm saying, David, that I think it is time again that we look back at this act and look at the practicalities of life to see if it can be amended. So the point I'm making, first of all, that it has to go back to Parliament as an amendment. All the talk we can do, it is law. So there has to be an amendment. Somebody in Parliament has to ask that to be an amendment, and the amendment has to walk through there before and recommend what you want to change. But at the same time, as usual with laws, you have to be mindful of what the society thinks on a number of these matters. And I believe that if there are special cases, and if a person can make special pleading based on information that is offered on their behalf, I believe that public leanings can be given to them. But I think that it would have to be spelled out clearly in the law, the conditions under which the record will be expunged, because society also has a view on these things. But outside of that, because a person has gone to prison, it doesn't mean they can't get work. They may not be able to get work in the public service, but there are a lot of places out there that still give people work because they look at the circumstances in which they're working. For example, if a person was in prison for stealing, you're not going to put away the only thing necessary to deal with money, but you might give them another job where they're not tempted, where there's not a chance for them to be tempted, so that we have to be more reasonable and look at the particular circumstances. And I'm saying as a background to reviewing the act, all of this has to be looked at. But talking about it and not trying to get people to change the law is not going to help.
Okay.
Because the law is very specific.
All right. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hey, good afternoon.
Yes, ma'am.
I just want to add my 2 cents worth to the issue of a candidate for the constituency of St. George North. Now, my position is simple. The position of chairmanship of the Barbados Labour Party is similar in structure to the president of the Democratic Labour Party. and the Barbados Labour Party's chairman is Kay McConney, while Verla DePisa is president of the Democratic Labour Party. And the Barbados Labour Party, in their wisdom, chose Tony Moore as their candidate, while the DLP chose Floyd Reefer. So to me, the issue of Floyd Reefer being a candidate and Verla DePisa not being one is a non-issue. I want to go further and say that Glenn Clark has represented St. George North for 26 years. He's a community person, and he has contributed to the various communities in the parish of St. George widely. And according to the people of St. George, Glenn Clark was a very good representative, and hence the reason for repeatedly electing Glenn Clark. Now, Floyd Reefer, in his capacity as coach, is able to motivate and inspire individuals. He's also able to help individuals to achieve, well, assist them in achieving their potential. He was able to guide Sagicor's team to success for a considerable period of time.
I just want to stop you a little bit in your tracks here, because this is...
I don't have any tracks, Mr. Ellis.
The forum, I really would want to shy away from what could be interpreted as basically campaigning on behalf of a candidate.
No, I'm not. I was just giving the context in terms of community representation. Mm. That's all I was trying to do.
Right, well, it also has the potential to be interpreted as such. So just be careful.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. And then I wasn't going to be much longer. I wanted to say that prior to Glenn Clark, that I have observed that the people of St. George North, you know, they chose Cyril Walker, who had a community background. And prior to that, I believe it was Jack Odell. I don't remember before Jack Odell. So I'm just saying that it, to my mind...
I think they had ear hopping at one stage, too.
Right, right. Persons who would have had strong community background in various fields of endeavor.
Had a tendency, I think perhaps you could say, with the exception of Cyril Walker to some extent, the profile of the person who is represented that constituency has been relatively low-key by national standards and more parochial.
Exactly.
That is basically, you know, well, when I say low-key, in terms of when you go across the board nationally, but within the constituencies, these were people who were known to the people in that constituency.
Exactly, and who serve, you know, give yeoman service at the community level. That's the point I wanted to make.
And therefore, in your judgment, the choice of one or the other can revolve around that particular theme.
Exactly.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks very much.